On the afternoon of the widow's séance, it was a Sunday, a provocative scheduling on Mrs. Wells' part, and one of which she was very well aware, our Sook was sitting in the rectangular patch of sunshine that fell through the doorway of his hut, scraping clean the bowl of his opium pipe, humming through his teeth, and thinking about Anna. This had been his occupation for the better part of an hour, and the bowl was long since clean. His knife no longer turned up the reddish powder left by the burnt opium gum. The long chamber of the pipe was clear. But the redundant motion matched the redundancy of his repeating thoughts, and helped to reassure him.
A qui fat sang me si a?
Tong Wei, a smooth-faced young man of 30, was watching him from the other side of the clearing. Ah Suk did not respond. He had pledged not to speak of the council at the Crown Hotel, or the events that preceded it, to any man. The lad persisted.
Kiwi hai mai beyan da gipa.
Still Ah Suk said nothing, and presently Tong Wei gave up, muttering his displeasure, and sloped off in the direction of the river. Ah Suk sat still for a long while after the lad's departure, and then all of a sudden he sat back, uttered an oath, and folded his knife away. It was hell to spend his days waiting for her, thinking about her, wondering. He would not endure it. He would journey to Hokitika that very afternoon and demand an audience with her. He would go at once. He rolled up his pipe and tools, stood, and went inside to fetch his coat. Ah Suk had only understood part of what was discussed in the smoking room of the Crown Hotel 3 weeks prior. In his confusions, he had received no aid from his compatriot, for Ah Kui's English was even more severely limited than his own, and none from the remaining men of the Crown, whose collective patience was worn very thin by any request for clarification from Chinese men. Balfour's narration had been much too swift and poetically accented to be readily understood by a foreign ear, and both Ah Suk and Ah Kui had left the assembly at the Crown with only a partial understanding of all that had been discussed. The crucial points of ignorance were these. Ah Suk did not know that Anna Wetherill had quit her lodgings at the Gridiron Hotel and had taken up instead with Lydia Wells. He also did not know that Francis Carver was the master of the ship Godspeed, the craft that had foundered on the Hokitika Bar. When the assembly at the Crown broke up soon after midnight, Ah Suk had not followed the other men to the Hokitika Spit to look over the wreck. Shipping misadventures did not interest him, and he did not like to be on the Hokitika streets after dark. He had returned instead to Canieri, where he had remained ever since. As a consequence, he still believed that Francis Carver had departed nearly a month ago for Guangdong, and would not be due back in Hokitika for some time. Thomas Balfour, who had quite forgotten imparting this piece of misinformation to Ah Suk in the first place, had not thought to disabuse him. By the time the bells rang out 3:30, Ah Suk was mounting the steps to the veranda of the Gridiron Hotel. At the front desk, he requested an audience with Anna Wetherill, pronouncing her name with both gravity and satisfaction, as though the meeting had been scheduled many months in advance. He produced a shilling to show that he was willing to pay for the privilege of the whore's conversation, and then bowed very deeply as a gesture of respect. He remembered Edgar Clinch from the Secret Council, and had judged him then to be a decent and reasonable man. Clinch, however, only shook his head. He gestured, repeatedly, towards the newly washed wayfarer's fortune on Revel Street's opposite side, and spoke a flurry of words. When Ah Suk did not understand, Clinch brought him outside by the elbow, pointed at the hotel opposite, and explained, more slowly, that Anna now took her lodging there. Eventually, Ah Suk spied a thrust of movement in the front window of the former hotel, and perceived that the figure behind the glass was Anna. Satisfied, he bowed to Clinch a second time, retrieved his shilling from the other man's palm, and pocketed it. He then crossed the thoroughfare, mounted the steps to the wayfarer's veranda, and rapped smartly upon the door. Anna must have been in the foyer, for she answered the door within seconds. She appeared, as was her habit of late, in the distracted posture of a lady's maid, full of annoyance and disapproval, keeping one hand upon the door frame so as to be ready to close the door at once. Over the past 3 weeks, she had received a great many callers, wistful diggers for the most part, who missed her presence at the Dust and Nugget in the evenings. They begged to buy her a glass of champagne, or brandy, or small beer, and to shoot the bull at one of the brightly lit saloons along Revel Street. But their pleading had no effect. Anna only shook her head and shut the door. When she saw who was on the threshold, however, she pulled the door open wide and made an exclamation of surprise. Ah Suk was surprised also. For a moment, he simply stared. After so many weeks of recalling her shape to his mind, here she was. Was she truly so altered? Or was his memory so imperfect that she seemed, standing in the doorway, to be a wholly different woman than the one with whom he had passed so many luxurious afternoons, with the cold light of winter falling slantwise through the square of the window and the smoke winding about their bodies in coils? Her dress was a new one, black, and cut very severely. But this was not merely a new dress, Ah-Suk thought. This was a different woman altogether. She was sober. Her cheeks held a new luster, and her eyes were brighter, larger, and more alert. The syrupy quality to her movements was gone, and gone too was the slightly dreamy gauze that had always overlaid her features, like a veil of lawn. Gone was the vague half-smile, the trembling corner of her mouth, the awed confusion, as though she were privy always to some small bewilderment that no one else could see. In the next moment, Ah-Suk's astonishment had given way to bitterness. So it was true. Anna had rid herself of opium's dragon. She had cured herself when he had tried for over a decade to do the same, remaining always that shapeless creature's slave. Anna made a little snatching motion with her hand, as though wishing to steady herself upon the frame of the door. In a whisper she said, "But you can't come in. You can't come in, Ah-Suk." Ah-Suk waited a moment before he made his bow, for he trusted his own first impressions, and he wished to make this impression last. She was much thinner than he remembered. He could see the bones of her wrist quite plainly, and her cheeks were sunken in.
"Good afternoon," he said.
"What do you want?" Anna whispered. "Yes, good afternoon. You know I'm not taking opium anymore. Did you know that?"
He peered at her.
"3 weeks," she added, as if to persuade him. "I haven't had a pipe in 3 weeks."
"How?"
said Ah-Suk. She shook her head.
"You have to understand it. I'm not